Hello and welcome to The Check-In, where we gather on KBIA each weekday for community connection and conversation. Happy Monday, and thank you for checking in today. So as April turns to May, the school year, such as it is winding to a close. And the way this particular school year is ending is far beyond what any of us would have imagined just a few months ago. Back in September, high school seniors were getting ready and looking forward to a year and of prom, of preparing to accept the diploma they've worked so hard for. But this year, all of those big moments look a little different, and all the small ones in between also look different. That's really hard, and it's even harder for parents struggling financially and the many kids who are relying on school for food and safety. Today, we're talking about Columbia and schooling, how our schools are making it work right now, and how they're planning for what comes next. Our guest today is Columbia Public School Superintendent Peter Stiepelman. Peter Stiepelman, welcome to the show today.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. It's so glad to have you with us. And let me just say, listeners, you can join the discussion too. Are you a parent or a student? How are you adjusting to remote learning? What are you and your family struggling with? What workarounds have you found? Feel free to share all of the above with us. And what do you want to know from Superintendent Stiepelman? He's here with us. Give us a call. Let us know your question, your comment. Let us know what's happening with you. You can join our discussion. So, Superintendent Stiepelman, let me just start with a general question from your vantage point. I know you have been swamped with figuring out logistics on so many things right now. Like the way everybody does business with schools changed suddenly, dramatically, in some cases, quite tragically almost. What has the transition been like? How are teachers and students and families doing from what you hear?
Yeah, and also as you're inviting people to call in, it just that was not an invitation for my mother who's listening to call in.
Okay,
tell me later that I never call.
So and same with my daughter, who's a senior.
There you go. That's right.
Family not welcome, but everybody else.
I'll let you out her first. Okay. So it has been an incredibly difficult situation for us, as you know. I mean, it was March 17th that we sent a letter saying that we were moving out, and of course, leading up to that required a lot of conversation and dialogue with not just within the school district and with our school board, but with other school districts around the state, and of course, our colleagues around the nation, the things that they were noticing in their communities, particularly those that were hotspots, and then talking with epidemiologists about what are the markers that we should be thinking about as we consider what going out might look like. But you asked me about just what's been, I mean, this has been a new normal for us, and I'm sure when I've tuned in at noon, a lot of people have been using that phrase, and I think that's probably appropriate. Mm-hmm. We are trying to do the very best we can when it comes to still operating a school district for 19,280 students, the fifth largest district in the state of Missouri. And so I will say that our teachers have been amazing, you know, in terms of connecting with kids and regularly and routinely assigning work. We did have to make an adjustment pretty early on in terms of what that might look like, and we can talk about that if you'd like. But one of the things that I really have been proud of is the fact that we've been delivering food, more than 1,000 meals a day, to children in our community because one in every two kids participates in our free and reduced lunch program. We know that internet is unreliable for a number of families, particularly if they don't have internet. And so early on, our director of technology services was really quick about ordering 800 hotspots that we shipped out to families. And as devices would break potentially, we would then mail them a new device. So a ton of things. But I would say our community as a whole has been really charitable about the dramatic and monumental shift that we've had to make to school. And if in fact we have to do something like this again next year, I think there's also an expectation that we take that next step and do it even better.
Okay, well, you've kind of dived into a little bit of this already, Peter, but what would you say overall has been going well and what has been a challenge that you're still working on?
Yeah, so, you know, what's been going well, again, in terms of regularly assigning work to students, I have three public school students in my own home, so getting to see how they are operating and the daily arguments that go on in terms of getting your work done and trying to also balance my own job. My spouse also has a full-time job, and so managing three children and their schooling has been a challenge. So that as a whole, we noticed, was a challenge. I mean, we had teachers trying their best to keep school going like it's normal, as if, and it's clear that nothing was normal. We had homes where parents trying to work from home and then finding it impossible to manage their children in terms of the schooling. First responders and healthcare workers, potentially without anyone at home to provide support and structure, was a challenge. And then households with multiple children or you mentioned this earlier. I mean, homes where all income is now gone. And the main concern is now no longer school.
Yes.
So what I would say has gone well has been our attention to the social emotional needs of kids first and foremost. And developmentally, you've got a 5-year-old who knows that something's different because they're not going to school every day and not totally understanding that, to your 12th grader who has been told every day for their entire schooling that their biggest day about graduating and crossing the stage and the pageantry and the ritual and this rite of passage will not happen. And how do we attend to what grieving looks like and what trauma looks like on multiple levels? And so I know our counseling department has been connecting with families and then knowing that we're not alone in this. So we have great community partners like FACE, the Family Action Center for Excellence, has been connecting with families and just trying to provide that sort of support in a very trying time.
Okay, you're right. It is a very trying time. As you're pointing out, Peter Stiepelman, there are some real challenges for parents managing school, managing work at home. But that's kind of if you're lucky, as you say, you know, we've all had to adjust to the fact that there's so much worse happening for many people. Let me just remind listeners, you're listening to The Check-In, our daily noontime discussion here on KBIA, and you can join the conversation. Are you a parent or a student? What are you struggling with right now as you juggle caring for your kids and also teaching your kids at home? We're talking with Columbia Public School Superintendent Peter Stiepelman. As you can hear, he's juggling all of this as well. What are you dealing with right now? What workarounds are you finding? Are you finding something that works well? We're going to hear some of this advice from that side of things also from Superintendent Stiepelman. We'll just be talking about this over the next few minutes with Superintendent Stiepelman. We'd love to hear what's going on with you. Whether you're a student, any age, give us a call. I always hope to get a student calling us. It rarely happens. Occasionally it's happened. Peter Stiepelman, let me ask you, you just mentioned you've got three public school kids at home, and you are actually someone and your wife dealing with full-time work, a lot on your plate with kids at home. Let me just jump to the chase here and just ask you, what workarounds have you found? What works for you as a parent?
Yeah, well, one thing I can tell you is that there are families in our community that homeschool their children, and for any of us to consider what we're doing homeschooling is disrespectful to what they do, because we've had to try to create schedules and then hold people to their schedules. I'm grateful to the public schools and our teachers, because I'm not cut out to do the homeschooling piece. That's not a hack that I can celebrate, other than to recognize if anything, as a community and as a nation, the respect and awe that we stand in terms of who our teachers are and what they are able to do for our kids, it was never made more true than trying to do remote learning from home. So what have we done? We've tried to make sure that we have good schedules, that we are giving time for self-directed learning instead of what I was doing was a lot of micromanaging. Trying to explore what they're interested in as opposed to trying to align that to what has been assigned to them as well. So there's been a lot of cooking going on in the house.
Yes.
Yeah.
Cooking is good. I would say that's been a real lifesaver for us. Cooking, if you can get it. Peter, I know you also have had, kind of on the other end of the spectrum, you have had very much on your mind since all of this broke out, the challenges of students who rely on school for food and for safety and that they struggle to get at home. The district has been delivering food to students in need and creating drop-off points, and this has been a huge logistical challenge, I'm sure. Will this continue during the summer, and how are the kids in need doing from your perspective?
Yeah, so I can tell you what's been reported to me. So first of all, that was one of the major reasons why we resisted going out until we mm-hmm. ultimately had to. And one of the markers that we looked at was attendance. So do you start losing the trust of the community in terms of sending their children to school? And so when we went from a Friday attendance rate of 88% to 76% on Monday to 64% on Tuesday, you know, families were already saying, we're not coming because we're concerned about COVID. And it was one of the hardest decisions to make because of the fact that mm-hmm. almost one in every two children participates in free lunch in our school district. And so we had to make sure that we had a plan in place in terms of establishing 80 bus stops around the city where we are regularly and daily delivering food. Our homeschool communicators, which is a professional position that almost serves like social workers in our school district in nearly every school. And they were tasked with making sure that food was being brought to homeless shelters and working. And so the feedback we've been getting is, A, that has been incredibly helpful. And we know we're not doing this alone. Again, the Food Bank, Veterans United, the United Way has been coordinating, Boys and Girls Club, a lot of, I know Culver's, I know Dave over at the diner, Broadway Diner. I mean, lots of people have been working together to make sure that our community, for those who have so many insecurities, whether it's housing and nutrition, but certainly nutrition in terms of food, have been stepping up and doing great work for our kids. So will it continue in the summer? We typically participate with a summer program with the food bank and other groups, and so I would anticipate we'll keep doing that. We're right now coordinating with the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education to see what kind of funding is also available for us in terms of to be able to pay for it. We think it's super important. You can't learn if you're hungry. We also know that we have an obligation and to taxpayers as funders of the public schools to make sure that we're really partnering and not trying to do anything all by ourselves.
Okay, great to hear. And it sounds like a lot of partnering has been going on, as you mentioned. Let me just let listeners know you're listening to KBIA's Daily Community Forum, The Check-In. We're checking in today with Superintendent Peter Stiepelman about how Columbia Public Schools are moving forward through this pandemic. How is the pandemic impacting your school experience or your family right now, your parenting? Peter's also a parent, so he's taking questions on that and how you get by. Cooking so far is one answer. What are you doing? What's your workaround? Let us know. Have you found a workaround, by the way, for prom night or graduation? Very curious about that. Call, let us know what's going on with you, whether you're a student, a parent, or someone just observing in the community. We'd love to hear from you. And Peter, we do have a call coming in. Let's take a call from Brad here in Columbia. Brad, thanks for calling in. Do you have a question or comment for us?
Yeah, I do. Hey, Pete, this is Brad Faith. How you doing?
Hey, Brad, how are you, sir?
Good, good. Hey, my question is this. The kids are pretty much missing out on about 3 months of in-class schooling. So when you guys pick up next year, where's that going to leave the kids as far as curriculum-wise goes?
Okay. Peter, you want to take that question?
I can. And, you know, Brad is a chef, so I will now have to ask him for some additional recipes for my own children. So, So Brad, it's a good question and a fair one. So one of the things that we've been talking about is the fact that essentially kids have lost out on that regular face-to-face, almost a quarter of their learning. And the question that we have to reconcile is, are we anticipating that we have to teach five quarters over four quarters next year? Or is this really our opportunity to identify really what are the essentials in each curricular area and in every grade and make sure that we're covering those? And so what's nice about, particularly with elementary school, is that we work on the spiral. And so each grade level, you are spiraling back to the previous grade level as you then pick up and move on. In terms of like kids who are taking algebra and they have certain requirements to finish this year before they go into geometry and then geometry into algebra two and then beyond, it's going to be incumbent on our teachers to be given the guidance and perspective on where do they have to pick up, which will be different from where they picked up in the past. And so our curriculum coordinators, if I just use math as an example, Lisa Nieder, who is an incredible teacher, who is who is our director coordinator for mathematics now for the district, is hard at work right now looking at what is it that students are going to need as they return in August. And families should know that you know, a return in August may look markedly different than what a traditional school year has looked like in the past. So while you didn't ask this, Brad, it is important for us to note that there's no vaccine yet. There's no large-scale antibody test yet. And so COVID isn't going away. And so the school district as a whole has to be thinking about three different models for what learning will look like next year, either a traditional model like we've always had, or some type of hybrid that has fewer kids in classrooms for 6-foot social distancing, as well as complying with the health department's rules on the number of students that can be in a space, or completely online. And that's where I go back to where our community has been incredibly gracious about what it has looked like this spring. They are going to have an expectation that we are going to do something even better. And so when I think about what kind of training the teachers are going to need in terms of converting their traditional classrooms into a more online platform, we're in the process now of looking at how will we do that.
Okay, great. Brad, does that answer your question?
Awesome.
Hey,
yeah,
Brad?
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, before you say goodbye, I didn't want you to move too quickly. Just wanted to check in with you about how your chef work. It looks like you were a chef maybe for CPS Nutrition Services, and you might still be doing
that. Time.
Oh, they're doing some background checking on you.
If what you're asking me is I was... a food and beverage manager. I am here in town at a banquet center.
Okay.
And I mean, obviously our business has dried up. So, you know, I've been like millions of Americans out there, with a lot of time on my hands and just grateful that, you know, the government's been able to help out the best they can. And I want to give a shout out for Lena Fulham. She runs Nutrition Services down there. I know she's a huge part of feeding all of these, families that aren't able to get their meals that they normally would. But I also want to say, I think Peter is the hugest asset to our school district. I feel like it's in great hands with him. So,
okay. Well, thanks for calling in, Brad. Thanks very much for that. Yeah. And I wish you
the best of luck. Thanks for hearing me.
Good luck to you.
Okay? I appreciate that.
Okay.
Thanks, Pete.
Take care, Brad. Let me just remind our listeners, you're listening to KBIA's Daily Check-In. You can check in with us as well. Give us a call at 573-882-9136. Today, we're talking with Superintendent Peter Stiepelman about managing the kids at home, educating the kids at home, and how Columbia Public Schools is moving forward through this pandemic. How's the pandemic impacting your school experience, your family experience right now? Have you found workarounds, and what are you struggling with? We want to know all of the above from you. Peter, you mentioned that you're hearing from other professional organizations and schools and districts that you're in touch with. You know, one place that you mentioned, I think, in a Missourian report was Ann Arbor, Michigan, which is interesting because it's another college town. You know, funny enough, they are like Columbia in that they're one of the top public radio listening towns as well. Ann Arbor and Columbia are connected in that way. We're always sort of in
That's amazing.
I know, near the top for NPR listening. So that just kind of jumped out at me. What are you finding in these places, Ann Arbor and others?
So they're working through similar type of scenarios. So Janice Swift is the superintendent in Ann Arbor. She is an incredibly gifted leader, was Michigan's superintendent of the year just recently, and just a good friend and a great sounding board. And they're doing a number of things that we have been doing in terms of making sure the kids, that our children are fed, they're making sure that our children, that their children have access to the internet. They're also finding similar to us is that while lots of families have internet, it isn't always reliable. And so that has become an additional challenge for some of the families in terms of being able to access. They have internet, but it isn't a robust network, particularly in Columbia, where some of the outlying, almost the suburbs of Columbia, you have where the line sort of ends. And so that is not where the greatest signal seems to be. But they are trying to figure out what next year is going to look like. They, like Columbia, have a large catchment area. I mean, the fact that Columbia in its own right has 840,000 people associated with Columbia. We are, the hospitals, either 25 or 28 counties those counties are served by the hospitals here locally, many of them because rural hospitals closed. And so you have to think Columbia as an international city that it is, similar to St. Louis and Kansas City, although obviously smaller in terms of the metropolitan area. But so the fact that we're not a closed system, the fact that we're a porous system, is very similar to Ann Arbor as well. So where they're picking up from Ypsilanti, from Detroit, and so we're picking up students who are moving here from St. Louis, from Kansas City, from Memphis, from Milwaukee. And so as we are trying to think about the next year, we're trying to look back on what obviously lots of people keep turning back to 1918 and that epidemic, that yes. pandemic. And so, but for us, we're looking a little bit more to more recent history in terms of Katrina and to see how families had to have moved to where resources were. And there is great benefit in Columbia and similar to Ann Arbor that we are resource rich. We are an incredibly a resourceful community. We are an incredibly compassionate community, and there are great services that run really well. Everything from the health departments to public housing. These are the kinds of assets that individuals and families will look for as things turn even more difficult within a metropolitan community.
Okay, that all makes sense. Peter, I have to bring up something that I think is on a lot of people's minds, which is these landmark moments that I know are very much on your mind as well. The graduation, prom,
sure,
the school traditions, and you all are working to address this. You know, my senior in high school daughter tells me that you're getting some pressure from people. I have not seen this directly. I think on Facebook, which anybody can find. I just haven't found it myself. But people saying we have to have a graduation. I mean, what do you say to that? And what, what would you like parents to keep in mind? It strikes me that, you know, if you have a senior that's healthy and bored at home, that's a little bit of a luxury. As we've been discussing, there are students dealing with really difficult things right now and financial problems. But you know, senior is a big deal, as you've mentioned too from the beginning here. What would you like parents to keep in mind about these landmark moments? And what are you hearing?
Yeah. So, our principals have continued to talk with parents and students. You may have, as a parent, received a survey from your high school.
Well, yes. And we got a sign in our yard, a yard sign. That was
fun.
Oh,
yes.
Go ahead.
Additionally, we launched something called Thought Exchange, which I can do a whole show about because it's such an amazing tool for gathering feedback from a community. And so we asked the question, something like, what are your thoughts and ideas for creating a meaningful and memorable graduation celebration? Mm. And what was clear is that there are really strong feelings on this topic. Many, as you mentioned, wish for an in-person graduation for their children. Others, they think we should show extreme caution and avoid any mass gatherings. And so for my job is to balance these opinions and perspectives and try to find a reasonable answer. And so we sent a letter to families today, particularly to the families of seniors, so it'll probably be in your inbox somewhere, that says that we will schedule small in-person ceremonies for the end of July and into August. And so that's our goal, is to get a date on the calendar. We've talked with the health department to kind of talk that through. Now, remember, the health department set up they have a health order which says no more than 10 people mass gatherings over this next 3 to 4 weeks,
right.
Which case then we get into June, and then it's no more than 50. And then essentially we get into July and it's no more than 100. And at the end of July and into August, as long as everything continues to go as we might hope, again, we're not a closed system. And it would be really great if as a community, knowing that our best tool is social distancing, that we deploy that tool, that if we're vulnerable, that we stay, we take extra care, and that we comply with the health department's regulations. So if we get to 250, And so that would allow us to maybe have small graduations in person, which is really a large number of people want. They want some type of face-to-face graduation. And so if we do that, it'll be in small groups of about 40 to 50 students so that parents can attend as well. It will likely be indoors, so we'll have to make sure that there's social distancing in seating, because to do it outdoors on a football field, as some members of our community have pointed out that the Air Force Academy did theirs outside, that's true. They did it on a football field. For us, to do it on a the Air Force Academy is in Colorado Springs. So in April in Colorado Springs, the high there is 59 degrees, the average high in April. And for us in Columbia, Missouri, in the end of July, it's closer to 90. Plus, mm-hmm. on a turf field would be even higher. So either you put students on the field and it's very hot for them, or you put their parents on the field and that would be horrible. We think we'll be able to accomplish what families are asking for by setting a date and then continuing to monitor the kind of progress that we're all making as a community so that we can hopefully can actually have a graduation for those who want it. Because not everybody does, but I think that if we can provide this as an opportunity for those families that really do want, that it's almost, it's closure. You call it a landmark, yes. a milestone. It is one of those moments in time where you probably don't remember, or at least I don't remember my graduation, but I do know that there's a photo somewhere of me wearing my cap and gown with my grandmother, right? So, mm-hmm. And so I think that those become important milestones to remember. And so if we can do it, we will.
Okay. Very, very good thoughts. A lot to think about with graduation. We're talking with Peter Stiepelman, Columbia Public School Superintendent, and hearing what graduation might look like. We've only got a minute left, but if you want to give us a call.
Are you kidding?
I know. I'm getting, as a parent, the 1 minute warning. I'm getting the 1 minute warning here. But Peter, let me just give us a last question though before we let you go. What are your thoughts on going forward? What do you want us to keep in mind, and what's on your mind as you just take us forward into the unknown here for Columbia Public Schools?
Yeah, I would keep in mind the fact that as a community and as a nation, that COVID is real. And I say that because we have been exceedingly lucky as a county and as a city. While there has been a death, while there has there have been about 90 cases of that have included recovery, let's also remember that 50,000 Americans have died. And many communities around the state and around the nation have experienced so much more. And I say that not just to say take a step out and empathize with others, but to recognize that could happen here, mm-hmm. if in fact we don't comply and do our very best to experience and practice social distancing. And I know you're now out of time, so I'll stop there.
Yeah, that's perfect. Great last word, Superintendent Peter Stiepelman. Thank you so much for joining us, and good luck with everything.
Thanks, Jen. I really appreciate it. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, you're very welcome. All right, that's it for the check-in today from KBIA. Thanks again to Superintendent Peter Stiepelman for joining us today. If you're listening and needing help, you can go to 211. Call 211 for the United Way of Missouri. They're there to help. You can also go to comohelps.org, and you can donate money or get help for relief efforts. The check-in is produced by Christopher Husted and me, with KBIA News Director Ryan Familiner, Zia Kelly, Madison Conti, and Hannah France. Check out KBIA's health reporting by Sebastian Martinez Valdivia and Rebecca Smith at kbia.org. We also want to know where you're at. It's a voicemail. You can call that voicemail at 877-532-0971 anytime. Just have a one-way conversation with us. Let us know how you're doing. Tomorrow is Giving Tuesday. We're going to have a Giving Tuesday extravaganza here. We're going to talk to a lot of people helming organizations that are benefiting and running Giving Tuesday. So tune in for that. I'm Janet Saidi. We'll be back here again, same time, same place tomorrow. Stay well and stay in touch.